Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And my co-presenters, Mike Jackson.
Hello, Carol.
And Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
We're here again talking about all things to do with murder and mystery and crime. Again, if you like our podcast, if you'd like to subscribe or like, recommend, we really appreciate that. It's going really well, isn't it, folks? We're getting lots of people listening.
We are.
We're thrilled to bits. Yeah. But what we want you to do is enjoy it. That's the thing. That's the reason we're doing it. That's the reason we're here. So before we start our theme this week, if you remember, Mike read two short stories last week. One he wrote and the other one was by AI. So we're going to reveal now which was which.
Dun, dun, dun. We need a drum roll.
Who can do a drum roll? One thing I will do. Oh, thank you, Liz. Very impressive.
Anytime.
One thing I will do is, in case you don't know, that we've also got a blog that goes alongside our podcast. And what I'll do is I'll put a post up on the blog with both the stories on. And so if anybody wants to go back and read them as well as listen to them, they can do. So the answer to the question was, of those two stories, the first one was about a Marcia Jenkins who killed her husband. And the second one was about a chap who was waiting for a phone call from people who had kidnapped his wife. And it was the first one that was AI generated. With that one, of the 100 words, I may have changed, edited two or three words. That would have been the most. The rest of it was completely ChatGPT. And the second one is one I wrote about 18 months ago, and that's completely me. And I would be interesting to see or to know what you think of the two stories and whether one was obviously AI and the other wasn't.
In retrospect, knowing you as we do, Mike, the one where your wife was in peril was obviously the one that you wrote. Yeah. The one where the husband got bumped off. That had to be AI.
Yeah. Out of character, isn't it, for me
too?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's all right, Anne. We know he loves you, really.
But one of the things I am finding, I'm playing around with AI and writing certainly 500-word stories. 100-word stories. And somebody said machines cannot be creative. I think they can. But I will leave that one just floating in the air because I know there will be lots of people out there that would disagree with that.
Yes, it's all a matter of opinion at the end, isn't it? So what have we got today? Today we have got the Christie Fest. Who doesn't like Agatha Christie? We were brought up on it, weren't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And she is still as popular today through all the different reimaginings of her stories and her characters as she was when she first wrote them. So just a little bit of background. I'm going to have to read this out, folks, because I googled it, I won't lie. She was born on the 15th of September 1890 in Torquay. She married her first husband, who was Archibald Christie, which was quite young when she married him, and it wasn't a happy marriage. She did actually disappear for 11 days. And that was in 1926. And it was a massive story all over the world that nobody knew what had happened to her. It was like she'd immersed herself into one of her own stories. And there's lots of theories about what happened then. She wrote her first book that was published, because she had, like most writers, she did have a lot of people sending things back to her and rejecting her. We tend to think of these very famous writers as, you know, being successful from the get-go, and it's not the case. Her first book was The Mysterious Affair at Styles, and that was published in 1920. This was a Hercule Poirot story. And I suppose they're the two characters, Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple, are the two characters that I think most people know. She also wrote The Mousetrap, which is the longest running. It ran right through the wars, but it got stopped for COVID. Everything stopped for COVID. But The Mousetrap is still going in the West End of London.
And it's coming to the Lowry.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Now. Yeah, well, exactly. Right.
There you go. You heard it here first. Theatre news, I'm on it.
She divorced her first husband and she remarried and she was very happy. She was an archaeologist, her second husband.
Max Mallowan.
She doesn't need notes.
She knows all it. I've been to Greenway. I've seen all the stuff.
And because we talk about women and women murderers tend to use poison. Poison was a method of disposal of people back in the day for both men and women. But she did have a good knowledge of this because she worked in a pharmacy during the First and Second World War. I don't know whether she was a pharmacist. I don't think she was, because you learn things very quickly during the wars, you know, and I think she probably was like a pharmacy assistant, but I could be wrong.
I imagine probably you had a little more responsibility because
you had to, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
But she really knew her stuff.
She did. She was a very, very intelligent lady. Mm. And she was, and still is, as far as I know, one of the best-selling authors in history. So she died on the 12th of January, 1976, age 85, of natural causes. So that's
all. So they say. That wasn't even rehearsed.
No.
So some interesting facts about our Agatha Christie. But as I say, do you think, Liz, this is, again, it's an opinion. Might think differently. Do you think she was the first female crime writer to be internationally recognised?
Ooh, good question. I suspect she probably was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there were other really, really popular female authors. So Baroness obviously comes to mind. Mrs. Braddon doing Lady Audley's Secret, which has never been out of print, apparently.
Well, there you go.
Since it was first published, mid-Victorian period, I think it was. I mean, in terms of name recognition, yeah, everyone has heard of Agatha Christie. Even if they've not read one, even if they don't like the idea of it, everyone knows who she is. And I think pretty much everyone has heard of Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
And probably most people have heard of Miss Marple.
Yeah.
Because she's ubiquitous.
Yeah. Yes.
And being popularised by film and television. Yeah. Yes. Especially television.
And we've had different actresses with Miss Marple. We've had different actors with Hercule as well. I think we've all got our favourites. We've all got the people that we like best. And mine is Suchet?
Yes,
David Suchet
for Hercule. I thought he did him so well.
I think I'd have to agree on that.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was really, really good. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think about the Agatha Christie? Are you a big fan or?
Yes, I am. But I read probably lots and lots of her books when I was a teenager.
So did I. It seems to be a thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I probably haven't read an Agatha Christie book for 30, 40 years, but I mean, that's just showing how old I am.
this is true.
But what I do is keep up with Agatha Christie stories through films and through the television, because they're always there.
Yeah. I was going to say, and some retellings are better than others, but
yes.
We'll do that in a minute.
Yeah. Yes. One of the things that did strike me when I was thinking about Agatha Christie, because I have to say my favourite character would be Hercule Poirot. And it struck me that the similarity between him and Sherlock Holmes, in as much as Hercule has Captain Hastings, Sherlock has Dr. Watson, Sherlock has Lestrange, the policeman, and
sometimes Gregson.
Yeah, and yes. Hercule has his name.
Jap, isn't it? Jap,
yes,
Inspector Jap.
And there are those similarities between the. The characters, and I suppose it just shows that it doesn't matter who you are as a writer, there are no new ideas as such. People always sort of borrow from other people, and I wonder whether
you have to situate them within a framework, because Hercule is not a police officer anymore, but was a police officer, and therefore will work with the officials. And Sherlock, in the same way, gets cases quite often through Lestrade or Gregson. Mm.
So you do wonder whether she was influenced in any way by Conan Doyle.
Possible.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
Because he would have been a popular crime writer when she was younger.
Yeah. Well, if you think Hound of the Baskervilles came out in 1900, yeah. I think, and she'd have been 10. So
it would have been something that the chances are that she was an avid reader of. I'm guessing here, but you do wonder how, because we are all influenced in our writing by what we've read.
Yeah. Mm. I was just wondering whether, I mean, I know if you go back, female writers have often had problems getting published because they're female.
Yeah.
You know, and they've taken on the pseudonyms of male writers too. I was thinking of the Bronte. Wasn't the one of the Bronte sisters, didn't she put a...
They were all the Bells, weren't they? The Corot Acton and then Ellis. Yeah. And then there's George Eliot.
George Eliot, yes. Yeah.
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 Because they knew that they wouldn't be accepted because they were female. And what do they know about these things, you know? Mm.
And then you have someone like, well, Josephine Tay, we know her as the prime writer, who also did plays under the name of Gordon Daviot, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then she had another pen name as well, which I think was initials. So she was working on three at the same time. I mean, that is quite some going.
I suppose Agatha Christie, though, when she was writing, was probably just coming into an age where it was more acceptable for women to be recognised as writers and to be published as writers.
Yeah. Mm. I know I read somebody from another writers group when I used to live in Cumbria, she wrote about a female doctor in the First World War. And she was actually a doctor herself, and she had worked for the Doctors Without Borders.
Yes.
And it was this particular doctor had to go to France, first of all, that nobody would take her as a female. She was a surgeon. Nobody would accept her as a female surgeon at the time in England. Mm. And I think she started off in this hospital in France as a nurse. And then people sort of thought, well, she's a bit better than a nurse, you know. Mm. And it just made you realise how hard it was for women to be accepted in what was usually seen as a male role. Mm. But I think both the First and the Second World War did change that for, hopefully for the better, slowly anyway, that females could actually do what men could do in a lot of jobs.
I didn't realise until I was doing, like you, Carol, I did a bit of research on Agatha, that she wrote short stories and play scripts. We all know about The Mouse Trap, but I didn't realise that she'd written other plays.
Yeah, and romantic novels.
And romantic novels?
Yeah, under a pseudonym. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't till I looked it up, you know, about
that. Very, so she was... So she was quite a prolific, writer, wasn't
Absolutely.
She?
Absolutely. I mean, how many books did she do? Must be about 80.
Must be. Easily. Must be.
And even so, you have people doing new ones now, don't you? I think, is it Sophie Hannah that's doing some more Poirots?
Oh, right.
I'm not au fait with that, but hopefully.
I believe so, yeah. And then there's a book came out fairly recently called Marple, and it's, I think, 12 female authors each doing a Miss Marple story.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I haven't read it yet, but I'll get back to you when I do. The reading pile is large.
Right, so we'll go to favourite books. Do you have a favourite book?
Difficult. The Murder of Roger Ackroyd has got to be up there.
Yes.
Yeah. No spoilers, but it's fab. I also like, let me see, because I was kind of racking my brains really. I mean, Death on the Nile is also great. Yeah. A Murder is Announced. I like The Body in the Library. I'm going to mention And Then There Were None also, which may come up in a later podcast as well, because of the suspense.
Yes.
And I have a bit of a sneaking fondness for the Tommy and Tuppence books.
Oh, yeah, they're nice, aren't they?
They are nice. And the thing is, you don't have that many of them. So, yeah, I like Tommy and Tuppence. And they kind of grow older, you know, with each book. So they start off being bright young things and then, you know, later on, you know, one of them's got a dicky hip and things like that. So
they actually age with the with the writer. Mm. I was going to say, Then There Were None is a top-selling book and has sold over 100 million copies. So, you know, you're quite... I mean, my favourite is Murder on the Orient Express.
I agree with you. That is good.
Because of the twist at the end. Again, if you've not read it or you've not seen any of the films, I'm not saying anything because it is... probably not what you expect.
I think where she's clever is that, you know, Murder on the Orient Express, they're all on the train. You know, so the murderer has to be there somewhere. So it has you guessing all the time as to which one did it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like she locks you in a room with all these murderers.
It is essentially a locked room mystery. Locked room mystery, isn't it?
Yes.
Just on a slightly larger scale than usual. Yeah. Yeah. But yes, what did you think? I'm assuming you've seen the Kenneth Branagh version.
Yeah,
what did you reckon?
I liked it. Every time a new version of these come out, I go, oh, that's my favourite now. I thought, again, the slightly different way he played Poirot, not only slightly, gave a lot to the story, and a real array of famous actors and just actors. I always, because of my age, I always say actors and actresses, and you don't anymore. You just say actors. Yeah,
it is nice though, isn't it, when you have, you know, a fantastic ensemble cast, and you just get to enjoy watching them do their thing.
Yeah.
That said, I was a bit about, you know, Hercule Poirot getting a bit heroic in places, because
he didn't.
To me, though, he's this kind of, you know, funny little guy.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't take him seriously in spite of his fantastic record, because he's, you know, this, you know, bit of an oddball. And, you know, back in those times, it would have been, oh, you know, a foreigner as well. I mean, you know, obviously Hercule goes to show that all this is completely wrong, but, you know, when Kenneth Branagh gets his sort of, you know, heroic behaviour on, I was like, this is not correct.
It's a bit like, you know, imagining that Hercule is going to chase after a baddie somewhere, because Hercule doesn't chase. Hercule sort of waddles.
Yeah, a bit like a dog.
He doesn't move quickly at all. Which is one of the reasons why...
It's another similarity to Sherlock, actually.
Yes, it is.
In the sense of, you know, I mean, occasionally Sherlock will go out and, you know, look for clues and things, but mostly he just sits in his room and says, oh, you know, measure the length of the ladder and that will tell you who did it. And you're like, what? But yeah, I can see Hercule doing that as well.
I think the thing with watching other people play Hercule, I'm so used to seeing David Suchet play that role that nobody else seems to be the same.
Yeah.
However good they might be. Because I've got it fixed in my head that Hercule is David Suchet, David Suchet is Hercule.
Yeah. I mean, when we go to Miss Marple, I love the idea, because I am a little old lady that knits. I love the idea.
You're rather tall.
Yeah, true.
Tall old lady who knits.
I like the idea of sitting there and knitting and taking it all in, and then going, well, I really don't think you should be seeing that man, because, you know, from what I've learned, he's got two wives and they both died mysteriously. And then pass me my ball of wool.
Yeah. Oh, she reminds me of my underhousemaid 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just like the idea again that this woman who people would just, you know, disregard as being a quaint little old woman who's got a mind like a razor. Mm. I suppose I look at her and think, would Agatha Christie have been like that? Did she base Miss Marple on herself? You know, that sort of thing. But again, there's been so many reinventions of her character on television. Have we had many Miss Marple films? I don't think we have we?
Weren't there the Margaret Rutherford one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's going back a while, isn't it?
Yeah, the only reason I know is because my husband's a big fan, and I remember, like, watching this one going, that's not Miss Marple.
No.
You know, Margaret Rutherford being all sort of big and jolly and bouncy. And
yes, she was.
Isn't correct. Sorry, I'm a stickler for Miss Marples, clearly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Joan Hickson for me is the definitive.
Yeah, the one that did it last, and I can't think of her name. I liked her.
Geraldine McEwan?
Was it? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Do you know, I didn't see that one.
No, but yeah, I liked all the ones I saw on television, the sort of the recent, more recent ones. But the idea of this little and when the police won't take her seriously, and then she goes, oh, well, the chief inspector's a personal friend of mine, or somebody even higher up, and then they stop in their tracks and go, oh, all right. Because they're scared of offending somebody higher up.
I always think the Miss Marple almost seemed to fit into the cosy mystery, murder mystery genre, more so than Hercule Poirot does.
I'd agree.
And whether it's because the setting, you know, in the quaint little English village, you know, you.
I think also with Miss Marple, one of the big messages for me in the Miss Marple books are, you know, human nature is always the same, whether you're talking about, you know, your housemaid or the things that, you know, the boot boy got up to, yeah. which, you know, whoever who's maybe, I don't know, a movie star or something else, you know, has done something exactly the same. And, you know, she makes, not exactly makes no distinction, but she sees the patterns repeating. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of nothing new under the sun feeling. And so even if it's some big extravagant crime, she still will be able to, you know, relate it to something quite small.
Yeah. I think the great thing, too, with all of Agatha Christie's work, but Miss Marple particularly, is that she almost throws these little bits in. Oh, and of course, you know, Mrs. So-and-so's housekeeper, you know, I don't know if you know, but 10 years ago she did, and you think, oh, right, is this a clue, you know, and you get all these red herrings being popped in all over the place. Yes.
When she's having tea with the vicar's wife.
Yeah. And you can almost see her mind, and you're trying to get into her mind to say, well, where's she going with this? What's she thinking? Mm. You know, what's the clue? Who did it? What am I looking for?
Yes. Yeah, and in some ways she's more of an oyster than Poirot is, because Hercule Poirot's got Hastings, and yes, he can do a bit of teasing, but you have Hastings trying to worm it out of him as well, whereas Miss Marple is just Miss Marple.
Yeah.
Yes,
and it's funny, going back to Hercule, I was saying, making the comparison between him and Sherlock Holmes, it only struck me, I was watching the other night Death in Paradise.
Oh, yeah.
And made me think of Hercule Poirot, because Death of Paradise, they always have to get everybody together at the end so that they can explain who did it and how. And Hercule does the same thing. Mm. It gets everybody together at the end so that they can go through how he worked it all out.
Yeah, but this is the sort of thing that these murder mystery evenings and events are based on, isn't it?
Yes.
You've got the clues, and then the inspector gathers everybody together at the end and tells you who's done it.
I think this is part of the appeal, in that, you know, yes, it's a crime, and, you know, generally, I mean, it might be a murder, but it's not going to be anything harrowing or horrific that you're actually going to see, usually. But you know that at the end, you know, everyone's going to be in the room and it's all going to be okay, because it's all going to be explained, and then everything will go back to the way it was.
And as the reader, as the listener, you can sit there and think, ah, yes, it all makes sense now.
And quite often it's a world that you'd quite like to be in.
Yes.
You know, you're in a nice cozy village, or you're on the Orient Express. I mean, who wouldn't want to be on
that? I know, it's on my bucket list. Go on the Orient Express.
Talking about murder mystery evenings, and this is nothing to do with Agatha Christie, I'm just throwing this in, but I'm going to one at a local library in 2 weeks' time. It's a murder mystery, but it's Shakespeare.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know which Shakespeare play it's based around. I can't remember. But that's going to be interesting. I might talk about that in a future podcast.
It's got because to be Macbeth, hasn't it?
I don't think it is Macbeth.
There's quite a lot of I hope it's not Titus Andronicus for your sake.
I don't know. But if I've ever been to a murder mystery, that it's usually a sort of an Agatha Christie, something like that.
Yeah, country house type thing.
So to be a Shakespeare, it's going to be
interesting. To say the least.
Nice your feedback on that one.
Oh, yes.
What sort of a mind do you think Agatha Christie had to be able to come up with all these? As a genteel sort of upper class, she came from quite a good family, didn't she?
It was an interesting one. Yeah. I think her father was, you know, I think there was money around, but I don't think her father was particularly good with it.
All right.
So I think her sister married well. She married a man called James Watts, and they lived in a very, very nice house in Cheshire.
Yeah.
There was definitely money around, I'm not sure that, you know, she was exactly wealthy.
No.
But I think she must have known or moved around in circles where there was money. Because when you think of her stories, there's always a setting, isn't it? Especially something like Murder on the Orient Express. You know, the setting is very luxurious, and many of them are. There's the luxury there, and it's the upper class.
Again, that setting where you want to be.
Yes.
Or Death in the Clouds, which is on an aeroplane.
Yeah.
Because she spent quite a few months in Egypt and places like that with her future husband and then husband. Mm. And she got the idea for the murder on the Nile, I think. Death on the Nile.
Yes.
There was a
tidbit for you. She used to help clean the finds.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, she had some incredibly expensive face cream, and apparently it's very, very good for cleaning, like pottery shards and things. So she'd be there, like, you know, helping
rubbing it on. Yes. Yeah. Estee Lauder cream, yeah.
Bringing it to life.
Yeah, there was a bit in one of the modern Agatha Christie stories. She's actually on an island on holiday, mm-hmm. And somebody dies. I can't even remember the name of the actual book, mm-hmm. but the person that manages the hotel says, oh, Miss Marple, we're having a speaker coming to talk to us tonight. He lives on one of the other islands and he's a writer, but he writes about crime and fiction. And she goes and she sat down and, oh no, he wrote it. No, it was somebody who she was going to sit next to. The speaker was about birds, was talking about birds. And this man sat next to her and he goes, hello. She goes, hello. And she goes, because you are here on holiday, and yes, oh, I work. She said, my name's James Bond. Who wrote James Bond?
Fleming.
Yeah. My name's Ian Fleming. Yeah, and he said, I said, how's it going? He said, I'm trying to get a name for my character. And then this bird watcher stood up and he went, evening, ladies and gentlemen, my name's Bond, James Bond. And it always stuck with me. I always thought that was really funny. I mean, it didn't happen, but somebody thought that it would be good to put it in the actual film that was on the television.
Actually, I thought that did happen.
That's where he got the name.
That's where he got the name from.
Is that true?
That's true. That's where he got... Yeah, that's where he got the name from. Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah, I fluffed that bit, but yeah, I feathered it. Yeah, so why has she stayed the test of time? Why are her books so popular? Is it purely because we keep getting more and more people doing her plays and doing her television?
Helps to keep it up there, doesn't it?
Because she's as popular now as she's ever been, I think.
I'd agree. I mean, if you look in any of the, the Amazon mystery charts, she'll be there.
Yeah.
You know, with an edition. I think there's probably lots of factors. I mean, one is the sheer amount of books she wrote. Yeah. So, you know, you read one Agatha Christie, you know you've got an awful lot more to read if you enjoy it. You know, if you don't consume it that way, you can watch on TV or watch a movie. And with streaming services now.
Mm.
You know, as you've said, you haven't read one for a while. No. Nope. There's always
something on the television.
Agatha on the TV that you can watch. Often the glamour of the settings. The knowledge that everything's going to turn out fine in the end. And that's nice and reassuring, isn't it?
I think they're easy reads, too.
Yeah.
You know, they're not long novels. They're fairly short books. They're an easy read.
Yeah,
And they are that sort of cosy, as Liz said, it's that cosy mystery. You know that everything will be all right in the end and that the evil will lose.
Right, yeah. And I think
there's a reason why lots of people say they read Agatha Christie as a teenager, because it's that sort of first step into grown-up books that they're definitely grown-up books, but you know it's going to be a happy, some sort of happy ever after, or it's all going to go back to normal at the end. You're not going to have, you know, horrible surprises necessarily.
So have we got anything that's appropriate to read out between the three of us?
Not really. No, I haven't got anything.
It would have to be a piece from Agatha Christie and we haven't got anything prepared.
But no.
Right, so I think we have given Agatha a really good sort of promotion there.
I'm sure she's very grateful.
She definitely doesn't need it, but she definitely does deserve it because, as I say, she is always popular with so many people. We love her. We love her work.
Mm. And if you've got a favourite Agatha book, then let us know in the comments.
Yes, yeah. It might be something we've not even mentioned, we've not even thought about. Yes, so we'll leave it there and join us next time. I'll say goodbye to Liz.
Bye.
Goodbye to Mike.
Goodbye, Carol.
And just remember, before you go to sleep tonight, look in the wardrobe. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.